Hi, this is Maggie Rose, and you're listening to Salute the Songbird on Osiris Media. I started this podcast to showcase women in music who inspire me and who I want folks everywhere to know about. My guests are icons in contemporary music, independent artists, studio musicians, hit songwriters, and power players behind the scenes. All of them challenging the status quo, respecting the hustle, and leading the way for women following in their footsteps. Salute the Songbird is a platform for women in music to share their stories and let their voices be heard. And everyone has a seat at the table. Welcome. Hey, everybody. I usually like to have these chats with you before my conversations with my guests in anticipation of them and to let you know where my head's at. But with Mickey, I had to do it a little bit differently because I found out the day after she and I spoke that she received a Grammy nomination for Black Like Me. And she totally deserves that nod of recognition because she's been working so hard for so many years. But she and I are also very close, so this conversation is wonderfully candid and also a little bit heavy at times. And on a personal note, I knew going into it that there would be topics that would be a little uncomfortable to discuss. But I also didn't get into music myself to be political, but I would be remiss, like so many other artists, if I hadn't commented on the state of things going on around us. And I've heard comments like, shut up and sing, and things like that. But Mickey so gracefully walks us through her experience as being a Black country singer and a female in this industry. And I think everyone should listen with sympathetic ears. Enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. But also, I know you're going to walk away with a little bit more compassion and a whole lot more appreciation for Mickey Guyton. We are good. All right. Hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much for doing this, and especially with all the wonderful and exciting and scary things going on in your life.
Girl, this baby is—it's wild.
What's the due date?
February 12th.
That's so exciting. That's so soon.
I know. Oh my God. I know. Can you believe
that? He's gonna be a little Aquarius.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. I'm excited and terrified.
There's so much I want to talk about with you. Yeah. It's so great to see your beautiful face. And
it's great to see you.
Welcome to Salute the Songbird.
Well, thank you.
This is the year of Mickey Guyton, so.
Lord almighty. I don't know how that happened.
What do you mean? I think everyone has come to know your name this year, even though you've been in Nashville for over a decade, toiling away. I've seen how hard you've been working.
It goes both of us. We both have been just freaking hitting that pavement, you know, just trying to create opportunities where there are none. We have been through it for sure.
Well, we salute you and the pregnant woman.
Sorry, I got pain in the belly. Yeah.
For those of you listening, that's the sound of Mickey Guyton in pain, her baby boy.
He puts his feet in my rib and it's hurts so bad. I'm so sorry.
Well, he's ready to come out. He's going to be strong like his mama.
That pain.
You carry it well. You know something about pain. So this is nothing new. This is just 2020.
Thank you.
Staying on its bullshit right now.
Yes, it is. Ugh, damn it. Whew. Okay, I'm good.
So this year you've released Bridges. And I'm so excited to talk about how that came to be musically and all the challenges you had with the pandemic. You've found out that you're going to be a mother for the first time. In fact, I think we were talking in June and you had just released Black Like Me.
Yeah.
And didn't you find out like the day after something crazy dramatic like that?
So 4 days later, I found out I was pregnant.
Yes. Oh my God. And you just released this song that had been around for a while, correct?
Yeah, it'd been around for a year. And when I released this song, Black Like Me, I was so terrified at the way the response was going to be. And if you think we live in a land of the free, you should try to be, oh, black like me. Oh, and someday. I was kind of locked up in my room for 4 days. I just, you know, we are confined in these spaces and it's kind of safe. It's a safe space for me. So I was just terrified. There was so much unknown for a song like that that was so true to me, which is crazy to think that having a song called Black Like Me could possibly have a whole bunch of backlash, and it did.
Right.
There were some people that were very upset that were...
It's hardly a controversial idea to suggest that someone empathize with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You were scared to put something out that was truthful, that you had been holding on to for a while, that you knew your label loved, but they were afraid of the response.
And they didn't know what to do with it. There was so many unknowns with that song and this moment. And I was literally just in my room for 4 days, terrified because I didn't know how people were going to respond. And then once I emerged from my room, like, whew, it's not so bad. I find out I'm pregnant. And it was like, what the hell is this?
That kind of puts everything into perspective, I imagine.
It does. Yeah. It did. It has. Oh my God. Oh my God. Yeah.
Well, it was just so exciting. And I thought that you took it into your own hands when you just released it yourself, because the time was then, and it was only then, with George Floyd's murder and Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor. And
I wrote that song before those.
Who'd you write it with?
I wrote it with Nathan Chapman, Frazier Churchill, and a woman named Emma Didi. Mm-hmm. And I wrote that song because I had seen all the murders of countless other people like Botham Jean and Tamir Rice. And all of these people that are murdered just so unjustly, whether you think that they had the best life or they lived and were model citizens, they didn't deserve to die. And even a song like this, while I was on tour with Brad Paisley and was trying to figure out my life in Nashville, singing in front of Confederate flags, and I've been called the N-word at shows, I had saw police brutality against my own husband.
Right. I had heard about that. You told me
about
that.
And it was on a 4th of July, and I'll never forget. Karen had called the cops and said we were shooting fireworks into her home.
Oh, that sounds like something you would do.
Yeah, right?
Not at all.
You know? Yeah, no.
In your busy schedule.
In my busy schedule. And I'm just like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And there was false accusations and it was so horrible. And these cops were like, you're not a lawyer. That's not your car parked in the driveway. This isn't your house.
That's insane.
Yeah.
And he is a lawyer. And
he is a lawyer. That was our car. That was our home.
And it was because it was a nice car. And there was speculation that this ignorant person decided to voice.
And I came from a place where, like, if you're doing the right thing, nothing like that will ever happen to you. And we were doing the right thing, and that happened to us. And it was devastating.
I want to talk about where you came from and your path to country music. And I met you back in 2011, right when you had moved to Nashville for the first time. We were at Nellie Joy Reeves' house.
Yes, at her house.
All these women, female artists from Nashville. And it was just a really great evening where I think we came together, and it was where the spark of these conversations was really igniting, because the disproportionate ratio of men to women on country radio was so apparent, had been for a while. And Rita Wilson was doing a song called Girls Night In, I believe.
Yeah,
so that was how the video was captured. And Stephanie Chapman made you go to bed early because you were going to be on the Today Show the next day. And you know, you had this big push behind you, and I've always had such a powerful voice. But, well, why do you say that? Why do you do the app?
Because you can have these powerful pushes behind you and still not get the same opportunities because you're a woman.
Right. Exactly. And you had Capitol Records behind you.
Yeah.
Nathan Chapman, Dan Huff. These are names that Carrie Underwood and Taylor Swift have worked with. And you kind of had the Music Row red carpet treatment. Mm-hmm. And you have the talent, you deserve that attention. But did you almost feel like that those first records were you having to play the game to be able Absolutely. To grant yourself more power to then do later on what you wanted to do?
Absolutely. It was, and that time when I'd first moved to Nashville, this common conversation in every room was, we've got to make sure she's really country.
Uh-huh.
Because people are going to think that she's not genuine.
Right.
And as I'm hearing these things being said to me, I wrote with that in my head. It was like you're told what you're supposed to write and what you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you know, Sam Hunt is wearing flat-billed hats and trap beats in his songs and mm-hmm. completely benefiting off of Black culture, who has not right. said Black Lives Matter, by the way, who has not come out and said anything, by the way.
The silence is deafening, yeah. I have to say, when I look at the country community. And, you know, I love Nashville, but there's reasons that I feel like I've sort of untangled myself and my music from that framework sometimes.
Yeah. Because absolutely.
It's like what you said, when you're on tour with Brad Paisley, who, thank you, Brad, for taking you out and supporting you, but you look out in the crowd and they don't all really look like you. And you feel like, why am I having to say what you think I should say to be validated as country when I'm from Arlington, Texas, and I grew up listening to Dolly Parton and Kenny Rogers
and
my grandma.
I actually lived in Crawford, Texas. If you want to get so really technical. Exactly. It was gravel dirt roads. It was in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Country, like my neighborhood subdivision was right next door to, at the time, Governor George W. Bush's ranch. Mm. And so I lived in this kind of world, and here I am now in 2012 and 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, trying to prove to people that I'm country.
And the glaring question that we're not asking is, why did they feel so desperate to prove that point? What did they think that their opposition was?
I think they were trying to protect me. I don't mm-hmm. think it came from a malicious space. It was more of like, they knew these people, they knew this audience, or thought they knew these people, mm-hmm. thought they knew this audience, and didn't want anybody to come at me in a mean, malicious way because I am Black. So they're like, so if we just go over the top with it, they can't say anything.
Right.
But then I got met with, well, just because she's Black doesn't mean she has to sing that country. Mm. And those were the things that were being told to me.
Not enough, too much. Like,
yeah, it was like I was never enough. Let's just be honest. I was never enough. And I was never going to be enough. None of us were ever going to be enough if we really think about it.
Well, and especially if we have to be enough, but then also adhere to the rules or expectations of us.
Yeah.
How can you be your full self when you're already trying to dilute that to fit yep. a certain image?
Yeah.
I read something in an article, an interview with you, where you said that Grant gave you a pretty pointed answer to the question you asked him of, why am I not working in country music? Mm-hmm. And he said, because you're running from everything that you are. And
that makes you different.
Couple goals for his clear ability yeah. to see you and see the struggle, but also advise you to embrace those things that I'm sure he loves about you and what I think the world is coming to love about you now yeah. that you're in your truth.
Yeah. That conversation changed my life because I was shutting out an entire audience that I was meant to sing for and sing to. Every single time I walked into a radio station and walked past that R&B station and went straight into that country station and completely ignored people that look like me. Every time I did that on radio tour, it never sat well with me. And I didn't understand why that was until I had that conversation with Grant. And I realized I not only have the power, it's a responsibility that if I've got the ears of people and the trust of people, I owe it to myself to bring other brothers and sisters that look like me up in my climb.
Right.
And that's important. And I didn't realize how important that was. I was being so selfish with my music and just trying to make it and trying to appease all of these people that didn't look like me. Mm. And it was debilitating. And I didn't understand why. I didn't know why. I felt so out of pocket, out of space, out of place, trying to please people that didn't understand me.
Right.
And that didn't understand my story.
But to your credit, you know, you're being a little self-deprecating with all of this. Like I said earlier, the pressure around you and the expectation, and also I think the genuine desire for capital to have you succeed as a Black woman in country music, that was sincere.
It was so sincere.
And it's been really exciting to see you so triumphant this year in what has to be a difficult, heavy, exciting, scary ass time for you. I am asking what you hope the climate's going to look like in a couple of years so that you don't feel the onus on you to keep having to deliver this message of unity and empathy in your music always, because there's so much more to you.
So much more.
Being a woman and being Black.
Yeah.
What do you hope for country music in particular?
Well, I hope that I don't have to continuously fall on the sword in speaking out on this. Mm-hmm. Like, not only is it difficult for women of color, it's difficult for women, period.
Sure.
White women. Like, you know, being in this industry, you now know what it feels like to truly be discriminated against. Like, you experience it every single day that you wake up. Blatant discrimination. And I would love to not have to have these conversations.
Right.
And to not have to be the only one that's really, well, I'm not the only one, but one of the very few that are willing to have these open, honest conversations.
You're definitely leading the charge in so many ways.
My goal and purpose and hope is that other women in this genre, Black, white, whatever you are, can see that and realize that they have a powerful voice too, that they can use not only when it comes to speaking out about this injustice, but within their own personal careers, mm-hmm. as they're navigating these writing rooms with majority men who may take over your writing session and say, you should write something like this. Right. I hope I can empower women and people and marginalized people to open their mouths mm-hmm. and express and say what they want. And then therefore they can have lucrative careers that opens the doors. I hope there's artists from the LGBTQIA plus community that can come into this genre and have careers and therefore open the doors for other people within that community. And there's just such a wide open lane and space for people that are different that we don't mm-hmm. realize. And that's something that I would love to see within this genre. It would make us all a lot more money.
Right. Yeah. Come on, guys.
You know, it would enable so many more tours. So many other artists could have lucrative careers, which then could in turn them help other artists and giving them their platforms. And it's a chain reaction.
We love our boys.
We do.
We love our boys in country, but I feel like a lot of the glass ceilings that have been shattered have been women in recent memory. Like your CRS moment with what are you going to tell her? It must have been so scary. And CRS, for those of you who don't know, it's Country Radio Seminar. It's a week-long powwow of glad handing with program directors and labels and artists, and then lots of alcohol and just craziness. It's a way to get program directors to play your music.
Hear you out.
And a couple years ago at the Ryman, Casey Musgraves made a huge splash by singing Follow Your Arrow, which was controversial. And it talked about people in the LGBTQ community. And I find it kind of funny that a couple of years later, this is another watershed moment where you're taking that same stage at CRS to voice your opinion on what it's like to be
a woman
and all the complications that come with that.
But what are you gonna tell her when she's wrong? Will you just try and say it's been that way all along? What are you gonna tell her when she figures out that all this time you built her up just so the world could let her down? Yeah, what do you tell her?
And yet, those were such iconic moments, both of those, for the history of country music, but we didn't see airplay reflected on either of those songs. So what's the point? What's the big show that's being kind of put on? Because I read glowing reviews about both your performance in that setting and Casey's, and they couldn't really get arrested at radio.
Well, I think Casey, first of all, she found her own lane outside of that. And right. You can only chase the support of radio for so long before you realize that no matter what you do, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. So you might as well do what you want to do, because you can only sit there and smile and bat your eyelashes and say thank you so much and sing your ass off in these conference rooms for so often, where it's just, no matter what artist is out there, they're going to tell you why they're not going to play it. They're going to tell you why it's not going to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just doing whatever I want at this point and trying to open a whole different lane for women, women that look like me and women that don't look like me.
Right.
It's shown time and time again that they aren't going to support women.
Mm-hmm.
There's articles about it. There's blatant statements about it that have actually come out of people's mouths.
Oh yeah, the Keith Hill salad gate thing, when he likened women to the sparse tomatoes in a salad. And then the other guy who talked about editing the playlist in the late 90s.
Yep.
And you're like, well, that edit hasn't been corrected since the scales have tipped violently in another direction.
Yeah.
Honestly, there aren't a lot of women DJs at these country stations that I can think of.
No, PDs, nothing.
Mm-hmm. It's funny that the demographic that country makes all of its money off of, which is so many women, really,
yeah,
is not being given material from the perspective of those who consume it.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like you are more country than what you would consider as the contemporary country music out today, because it's about truth. And that's why I want to kind of talk about your road to Nashville and how country became the music that you wanted to pursue.
So I grew up singing in the church. I think that's where a lot of us start. It's just, worship service.
Me too.
I was in everything that was church was my family. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot, to be honest. I think I've gone to church enough for everybody in country music, I think. But it started off there. And how I even discovered country music was my grandmother. My grandmother loved Dolly Parton. So whenever I would go over her house, I would, you know, when VHS tapes were the thing, my grandmother had Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton VHS tapes hanging on the back of her door, along with Steel Magnolias and Fried Green Tomatoes and the Roots series on VHS tapes. So what did I do when I went over grandma's house? That was all that was there. So I would watch that, and I would watch Southern movies. And that's when I discovered country music. And more what made me fall in love with country music was Leanne Rimes. I saw her sing the national anthem at a Texas Rangers baseball game, and that freaking blew me away. I just remember, this is even before Blue came out, so I got a window into Leanne Rimes before Leanne Rimes was Leanne Rimes. And
her voice is just,
you know, that, and like hearing her sing the national anthem, I was just like, you remember, she just sounded like a grown woman at 12 years old. And so that whole phrase, you see it, you can be it, really rang true for me there. It was like, I saw that. I could have seen anybody else. I could have, I don't know what artist I could have seen at that time. And I could have been like, oh, I want to do that. But it was Leanne Rimes that I saw that made me fall in love with music. And in that time, there were so many amazing female vocalists at the time.
What a time.
You had Celine Dion, you had Mariah Carey, you had Whitney Houston, you had Faith Hill, you had Reba McEntire, you had Patti Griffin, you had
Shania,
like, come on. You had all of these just crazy talented vocalists. So that's what I listened to. That's what I fell in love with. Like, I heard women on country radio, and that's what I love to listen to.
Yeah. So it's no big surprise that there's so many of our peers who wanted to pursue country music. We were brought up in a time where they reigned supreme.
Yeah. We saw ourselves, and that was it. And so that's what made me fall in love with country music. But instead of me moving to Nashville right away, I moved to Los Angeles. And I thought to myself, when I was graduating from high school, I was like, okay, well, where can I have musical opportunities? Atlanta? No, that's very much so an R&B urban world. You can't say that word anymore. It's R&B or rhythmic.
Rhythmic, okay.
Rhythmic music.
Take notes.
Yes. And then there was New York, which was like, absolutely not for a little girl from the South. And so I moved to California, and I went out there, and I went to school, and I went to Santa Monica City College.
What were you studying?
I was studying business. I was studying business administration and business marketing. That's what I was kind of doing. So I know how to read spreadsheets and all that kind of good stuff.
She's got a brain.
I got a brain, people. I dabbled in a little acting. Like, I did the whole, like what you do in Nashville, I did in LA. So I dabbled in acting. I was doing background vocals for different artists, whether it was Patti LaBelle.
Amazing.
I even did something with Sheryl Crow, but she would never know. It was a project for Babyface. So I did a lot of background vocals with Babyface and for him. And so I was kind of just doing that, and nothing musically was really coming my way as far as like the genre that I wanted to sing. And so I went through a horrible breakup, and I was getting ready to move back to Texas because there just weren't any opportunities for me in LA. And I remember I ran into a random DJ that I never work with on the day that I was getting ready to quit LA, got fired from my job, one of my two jobs.
What was that?
So I worked at a bar in Manhattan Beach. And mm-hmm. then I worked at a cigar club in Beverly Hills.
I'm sure you met no entitled patrons at either of those spots.
Oh, oh my God.
You learned some serious life lessons. I think.
Working in hospitality, you learn yeah. so many life lessons for sure. Mm-hmm. And so I was going to get my mom. I was surprising her for her birthday. And I ran into this DJ I met when I did a movie a long time ago that I'm not going to tell people because they don't need to know.
Okay. I will push it.
I'll tell you outside yeah. of this so you can see. And I remember he was like, Mickey, like, how have you been? I'm like, I'm great. He's like, well, what are you doing? And I was like, you know, music and working and going to school. And he was like, well, you sing, don't you? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, well, what kind of music do you sing? And I was like, I sing country. Not thinking this hip hop DJ would ever have any doors, connections. And he turned out he did.
You never know.
You never know. Mm-hmm. And he introduced me to this guy named Julian Raymond, who's now over at Big Machine.
Right. Yeah.
Julian Raymond was the one that discovered me. Just so
I didn't know that.
Yes. It was Julian Raymond who then introduced me to my management. My management introduced me to Mike Dungan. I sang for him in his office at the kickoff of CMA Fest of 2011. And he offered me my record deal that day.
Oh my
gosh. That was a long story, but it was a roundabout.
No, not at all. I can't believe I didn't know some elements of that. And especially the fact that all of this happened in a kind of quick period of time with the potential career change or maybe moving back to Texas. And
it sounds a lot quicker, but it was actually like a 2-year period.
Right. Everyone thinks that it all happens overnight. You're like, 13 years later, here I am. Just,
here I am, new.
Just so, so exciting. And I think it is very true. You never know the origins of a great opportunity. And it's
hip-hop
DJ who is able to connect you with the right people.
Yeah.
And at Capital, you know, it's been, you've been there ever since you moved. So that was 2011 that you signed. And
yeah, I'm still there.
And Cindy Mabe seems to be just one of your biggest advocates, which I think is really cool that she's one of the few female label execs in town, in the country world. And she's been really vocal about her support for you and her belief in you as an artist and your strength and bravery. And it's refreshing to see.
I love her. And I think the reason why she has and supports me so much because her being a woman, her being in a high-powered position within our industry, she still faces her own forms of discrimination.
I bet.
Like, I've seen it. I've personally witnessed it happen to her myself. And there's just this instant, like I look up to her so much, but we also have such a close, like, eye-to-eye relationship because we understand, we know what it's like to be looked over. We know what it's like to have to fight your way into rooms and garner the same respect as someone that doesn't even have a candle of the drive and and talent that you have. And it's a talent that what Cindy does. If we could all, the world needs more Cindys. Country music needs more Cindys.
I wonder what ripple effect that would create if there were more Cindys at that executive level.
I think it's going to happen. I think as long as we as the artists start mentoring, like I know we're trying to get our own careers off the ground, but mentoring other people and other young aspiring talent to keep that effect going, I believe that's how more talented women will be in this community, is if we raise them ourselves, basically.
Right. I remember the coverage of your ACM performance was so expansive. It was crazy. I thought everyone, it made me really happy to see genuine support from everybody, but I kind of couldn't help be a little frustrated that you were having to shatter this glass ceiling in 2020 as the first Black woman at the ACMs, which is one of the biggest award shows in the country music genre. So I feel like the complicated feelings that you must be experiencing this year have to just be like a constant in rotation, just between frustrated, sad, excited. How are you managing to just keep an equilibrium about it all?
Well, it's the funny thing that you say that about the ACM performance, because when I walked off that stage, there was an overwhelming feeling of sadness on my end. Mm. I didn't know that it was a historical moment like that. I had
you didn't,
no
you
idea.
Did not know?
No clue.
Do you think it would have been daunting had you known? It was already daunting, I'm sure.
It was already daunting, and I was just sitting there, and there was just so many factors in that room. There was nobody in there. You had to wear face shields and masks, dressed in this beautiful dress just to get up to the stage. Mm-hmm. There were lines. There was all this protocol of where you could walk, where you could stand. And then to know that I'm given this opportunity, but there's so many other women that deserve this same opportunity that aren't getting it. Not just as me as a Black woman.
But you have to enjoy these moments that are yours too, because that's what people so enjoy seeing, is you taking this moment for yourself.
I do. And I didn't take it for myself, to be honest. You know, I smiled and did the thing and oh my God, but internally there was a struggle. Like, I was sad. I don't read any of the articles. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't read any of them, to be honest, because I'm trying not to get distracted by the goals. And the goal is still, there's still so little women played on the radio.
Right.
Even after singing a song like that, even after having Keith Urban there, me writing that song was hopefully for these people to hear and think, I need to do better. Mm-hmm. and open these doors. It's not a question. Like there's so many amazing songs out there. It's not about women needing to write better songs. That is not the case. Cause I've heard them. I've heard them even from you with your song 2020. That song is stunning, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you, Mickey.
I mean, just hearing it, like I want to put it on a record and play it on my little Crosley player just so I can hear
it. I'll send
that.
You a 45.
Please send it to me. And there's just so many, like I could name off so many amazing women that have the voice, that have the songs.
It's a total cop-out for that to be suggested by anyone. And you know, Neil Portnow, years ago at the Grammys, attributed the lack of women receiving awards to some suggestion that women's material wasn't as strong as the material the men were putting forward. And this is old news, and it's nothing's really changing. So you said, you know, Casey's found her own lane. To me, country music that I love is not, I'm not hearing it on the radio. I'm hearing it from people like you. You have to seek it out. And Tyler Childers, who,
oh my God, I love him.
I think everyone should watch his 5-minute video about the last track on his newest record, because it's put in plain spoken terms for people who really can't get outside their own existence and empathize with the plight of people who are parts of cultures that they don't know anything about.
Yeah.
So I feel like it's working. What you're doing is working, and it's country, and it's inspiring.
I just want to inspire women and people of color to create their own lanes. Like those rules that have been set for us that we don't know who set these rules for us, they don't work. And it's important for us as artists to do the artist thing. Mm-hmm. And then our audiences will find us. I truly believe that. I'm a testament that I tried to follow the rules for years and years and years and years and got nowhere. Mm-hmm. Nowhere at all. Like I got dismissed at a certain point. Like people didn't even consider me when I'd walk in a room, and that's fine. That is perfectly fine. But once I started truly writing what was true for me and writing for an audience that I want to write for, did everything change.
And you get looks from NPR and Washington Post and these, I know you don't read these articles, which is smart because then you can see your own vision. You don't have to see yourself the way other people do. But these are periodicals and publications that know their shit, and they don't yield to the politics of what some other outlets might yield to.
Yeah.
So it just feels exciting and like a new frontier. And your legacy is going to be so much bigger than this moment, I think, because it's almost like a brand new start.
It really is. It's wild.
We evolve, and you're allowed to. And it seems just like you've started a new chapter of your career as a musician. And there's this awareness that's heightened just about the role of Black culture in country music that people are starting to like wake up to. And
they're like,
the beautiful
museum
that they're opening in Nashville.
Yeah.
Rhiannon Giddens, like she knows probably more about country music
than
anyone here. I think I'm hopeful because of people like you. And while the other emotions are definitely there, and I have to say, like, I love writing country, but I got pretty jaded, and I think I burnt out on,
didn't we all,
the politics of that a couple of years ago. But it's exciting to watch now, and it makes me hopeful for what will come out of this genre in years to come.
Well, it's just watching like women like you and Margo Price and Casey Musgraves and Maren Morris and these powerful, strong women that are going completely against the grain.
Right.
And forging our own paths, even Kaylee Hammock and forging our own path. I think that is the direction where everything is going.
Right.
So people better get on that train or it's leaving the station.
Yeah, get on the train and like, let's go have some fun. Like, these are not controversial ideas.
No.
Equality and wanting to be understood is not an offensive message or movement by any means. So
equality and love and acceptance. That's like, all.
Which side are we going to fall on? And that's just been such a theme for us all collectively. But I think it's really a moment of reckoning for country music. So I hope that they continue to respond in a way that is adaptive and forward thinking and like, let's move on.
That's the side of history I want to be on.
This album, Bridges, the EP, was something that you did remotely while you were in LA because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And you had a producer in Nashville who was also a co-writer with you, a woman. What was her name?
Karen Kosowski.
And she produced this from Nashville over Zoom. And you were singing like in your living room. You had to learn how to do all this stuff and basically just belt it out in your own house.
While there's protests going on.
Right. And you find out in the midst of all this that you're expecting a child. And what are your hopes for this music? And I also want to hear about how you did this project remotely.
Yeah.
Like the technical aspect of that sounds like a nightmare, but also
you
did it. I'm very proud.
We did it. It was like, I had zero intentions of making a project like this. Mm-hmm. I was just really like, I had Black Like Me and What Are You Gonna Tell Her? I had those two songs. And I also had Rosé, this other song that I wrote.
I love Rosé.
Rosé.
Funny story about that song is I wrote that song 2.5 years ago.
Really?
And I played it for my label thinking for sure they'd be like, this is a song, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
And no, they didn't.
Which song did they want instead?
They didn't want any of the songs.
Because it's been 5 years.
They were telling me how this song wouldn't work. And it put me into a deep depression. And that's when I wrote Black Like Me. And that's when I wrote What Are You Gonna Tell Her? But at the time when I wrote Rosé, I knew I was trying to, and I wrote this song as a protest song. People don't know that. But I wrote this song because I didn't see a lot of women having drinking country songs.
Right.
And of all the songs, that is a woman's drink.
Mm-hmm.
It's rosé, you know,
and the brunches, like, and the brunches
and the green wall with the neon rosé all day on the back of the sign. And I remember one of the radio guys at the label was like, "I just don't know if this song will bring back Mickey," and just derailed Mike Dungan even liking the song anymore. It was horrible, and I realized like I will never be enough for these people.
Yeah, because that song would have been so great
if it were a white artist, a white girl, they would have put that song out in a heartbeat with Pink and all the things.
Right.
They
it would have been that out a brunch explosion.
Instagrammable. Whole campaign. But me, it was like, it was thought differently. They didn't see it. And it was frustrating and very, very, very hurtful. And so then I started writing songs like Black Like Me, not because I was trying to write it really for my project. It was more of like, let me get this out of my system because this is how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
What Are You Going to Tell Her? I wrote this year after going to a Grammy after party and just seeing even some of the biggest female pop artists like Billie Eilish and whomever else was in that room, Hailee Steinfeld, and watching them and thinking, I wonder what they've had to go through to just get opportunities within their field is some of the thoughts that I was thinking. And it was hurtful. And so then on top of that, then the racial unrest and then the country shut down and I'm sitting in my room and I can, or my home, because I live in downtown Los Angeles, and I'm watching the protests go right by my window.
Oh my God.
Which were peaceful, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many beautiful moments. The media was portraying such horrible things. There's way more beautiful moments than what they portrayed. And so I'm watching that, and I start writing this project, and I reach out to my label, and I'm like, we cannot stop creating because we're in a pandemic. If anything, we need to run towards that. Let's continue creating. And so I got with Karen, and I got with women that I love to write with, and we were writing on Zoom.
It's so cool.
And writing these songs, and I was just literally inspired by what I was seeing outside of my window. And then it came together. They were like, well, we want to release an EP. And I was like, okay, we'll release an EP. I have enough songs for an album, but we'll release an EP. And we just started there. And even when we were visually trying to find what the direction we wanted this, I really wanted a Black female photographer.
Nice.
And who was that? Felicia J.L. Munn is her name. She's so good. She is just fantastic.
The images were beautiful. And so you got to really take the reins on this. It was your choice to have Karen producing.
Yeah.
Which is badass.
And I even had, you know, guys being like, are you sure, Karen? Like, what does she have under her belt? And I'm like, I'm positive. She produced. What are you going to tell her?
Yeah.
I think she's more than capable of producing this record.
Well, and these are your babies. I feel like you would designate this job to someone that you really trust. And I think you're thinking about things with this focus, like, okay, I'm going to have a Black photographer. I'm going to have a female producing it. I'm going to
have females writing it.
Right. And it's also yielding a product that sounds and looks beautiful, and you can completely own it.
Mm-hmm.
It belongs to you.
It belongs to me. It all came from me and the people that I love.
Yeah. Well, and you still work with, you know, Nathan Chapman, who's incredibly talented, both producer and songwriter. So you have these people who've been part of your story involved in this awesome collaborative EP that you put out. But it sounds like you're doing things quite differently when it comes to the packaging and the terms on which you're going to create this music.
Absolutely.
It just feels like you've gotten to this point now where all those rules are out the window.
They're out the window. Absolutely. You know, all those rules are out the window, and it's also time to make room and make space for other people that wouldn't necessarily get those opportunities. Like Karen deserved that opportunity. Felicia J.L. Munn deserved that opportunity, and it was from a different perspective. Like, you can get stuck in the same cycle of the same people, which isn't bad by any means, by the way.
Even the most well-oiled machine needs a tune-up, though.
Yeah, it needs a tune-up. There, you know, Cam and this woman named Andrea are even putting together a spreadsheet of musicians from the LGBTQ IA plus community and Black musicians that artists should start looking towards, and even filling out their band to give other people a shot. Just there's a perspective there that you may be missing that could be this missing link that makes your set that much better.
Absolutely. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Where could people find that list?
They're working on it right now. And as soon as it's out, we will be giving it to every management company, every label, any and every person that we know, so that they can start and add on to that.
Right. Sourcing this whole army of people who have abilities to make this look more representative.
Yeah.
As it should to all the people who love country, which is a shit
so
ton
many
of people.
It is. And that's kind of the motivation behind this project, behind my own music, is literally where there's opportunity, there's possibility. And so opening these opportunities to other people, it lifts me up because I'm getting a totally different sound and perspective, and it's just lifting other people up. And I think that's the blessing within the blessing. Like, God has blessed me with this opportunity. He's blessed me with these songs. And therefore, all of these other people that are surrounding this project are being blessed as well and can bless other people. It's like this whole chain reaction. Like, music is so, I know you said earlier, you know, but music is selfish. Mm-hmm. It is very, very selfish. All of us, like, we have to be selfish to pursue these careers.
Right.
But taking out the where's my moment out of my thinking. You know, I was always wanting that moment. Where will I have my moment?
Right.
I took that out of my thinking, and my moment is giving that moment to other people.
I love that. You just articulated it beautifully. That is what you've been doing. And yeah. I bet you this is not fun to feel like you're having to, like, even talking to me, we're friends, but it's got to be, you have to be beleaguered to just feel kind of like you have to explain things to me or answer questions about.
I don't have to explain anything to you, Maggie. Like, you're a woke one. So it's not like.
That I am, and I love you, and I've respected you since I got to become your friend so many years ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is not necessarily why I think you got into music. You know, what does your grandma think today? Is she still with us?
She's not.
But she's so proud. And
she is.
She would buy every VHS with you on it of your ACM performance.
And she lives. My grandma really does live through me. My grandmother, my mom was the youngest of 12 children. My grandma was having, I know, like, the movie Color Purple is my grandma. Okay. And so one thing I learned about her at her funeral, it was beautiful. She was 92 years old when she died. And I even think, like, her spirit was at the funeral, because I was like my grandma was my grandma, and she knows I'm terrified of wasps and anything that stings. There were so many damn wasps at this funeral. And so I was so more focused on that. So I couldn't be crying over my grandmother. But one thing I learned,
fear trumped your grief.
She did. Yeah. I'm sure my grandma was laughing from her grave because I looked crazy.
Keep Mickey distracted today.
Yeah.
Don't let her get too down.
Yeah. And so
scare her instead.
One thing I learned is, you know, my grandma was really, really, really poor. But any kid that came over to her house, my grandmother made sure that they had a meal and that they were able to eat. And I carry that, I think, today, like
giving your moment to others,
you know, like, you're going to eat today.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in my presence, if you're anywhere near me and in this circle, like, you're not going to starve today.
Right.
And so I take her around, like, her spirit is definitely with me for sure.
I love that. And I listened to this 2-minute meditation that you did talking about, first of all, everyone should go listen to it. If you're feeling like you need an emergency de-stress moment, listen to Mickey's meditation about reflecting on those early moments in your life with your grandmother, where you were exposed to this great music that has definitely influenced and shaped your path since.
Yeah.
But you describe how she would use her own clothes to make quilts for you all, because she couldn't afford blankets, but that they were so beautifully imperfect. And it's just the sweetest. The songwriter in you is super apparent, because the description in it is just like, I felt like I was there in her house. And I love it. I can just see how formative those moments with her
were.
And when you describe her and her selflessness, we're ping-ponging between selfish and selflessness, but I think that you hold your music with deep care.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what you're saying is synonymous with selfishness, but it's precise attention to it. But you have done a beautiful job in realizing her legacy by being as generous with your experiences and your life and your empathy to others. I think she would be incredibly proud that
you're
part of the face of country music.
Thank you.
So I'm really glad she showed you those tapes so many years ago.
Me too.
Yeah, go listen to that beautiful 2-minute meditation thing if your life's a little weird right now, because it's just so beautiful.
Thank you.
So Brandi Carlile reached out and used her platform to amplify your music. And she's someone who I think I consider country music
royalty.
Royalty. I mean, she's... Yeah. What has that been like to now have your network be so visibly larger and star-studded than it ever has been before? And you feel that that's authentic support.
It's authentic support, and it feels beautiful
Is it scary at any point though?
It is scary because you're like, oh my God, what am I doing? I'm nobody, you know? But at the same time, it's like, we're all the same and we all want the same thing. Like, it's so much bigger than just your musical heroes at this point. Mm-hmm. Because what this industry does to even the most revered hero is criminal. So we're still, there's just this common, like, I don't know how to describe it. We are eye to eye, mm-hmm. and we're fighting for the same thing is what I believe it feels that. Like.
And it registers with me for sure when I see it. And
it's not a bragging moment that so often we do on social media, be like, let's have a girl party and have all our famous friends together and blah, blah, blah. Like,
right.
No, this is not these moments. And I mm-hmm. appreciate when I see people that I look up to showing me love. It means a lot, but it means I need to fight that much harder. These aren't moments to brag and to be like, ugh, I'm so cool. These are moments to keep fighting and making it better.
I hope that you are taking this moment for yourself.
I know. I need to. I haven't.
It's crazy. And I've been so looking forward to talking to you because there is so much to celebrate about the level of success that you've now been able to achieve in your career. And I just hope that you don't feel like you are giving away so much of this moment that you've worked so hard to get to.
I know.
And I feel like, is it tainting your experience? Because there seems like a bit of a sadness still with you when we discuss all of this. And I understand it, but I also feel like your hard work and your bravery and artistry that you've put into this music has earned you the right to enjoy the success that you've achieved to some degree.
I need to. I absolutely need to. But it's really hard for me to celebrate these achievements when so many of my peers that I love and are dear to me, that are just as talented as me, that have just as great of songs as me, are still struggling. Mm. It's hard to celebrate that. Like, it's like, you should, yes, this is a great moment. Absolutely it is, but it's still not right.
Mm-hmm. When do you think you will celebrate? What has to happen?
When I see more women getting their success, then I will be able to celebrate.
Amen. But try and have some serious fun.
I know.
Then, because I'm hopeful. I believe that it's going in the right direction. I'm just going to speak to the musical community in Nashville as a whole and the variety that's coming out of here versus in 2008 when I moved here and, you know, the apartments on De Munbrian were just a big parking lot and like good old boys club.
Yeah.
You know, there's rock and roll coming out of here. There's soul music.
There's so much pop music.
And I think the amplification of those different sounds and voices is just going to get louder and louder. We have a right to be hopeful, but I have noticed that you aren't just leaping into the arms of this success with total joy because these songs came from a place of struggle. And until these songs get to take effect and push the world in the direction we want it to go, I imagine that it's going to be a bittersweet feeling for a minute. But you have so many beautiful things and a baby boy on the way. And
crazy. Yeah.
So crazy. I'm so excited. What are your cravings? What are you eating?
Well, you know, I was eating a lot of like croissants.
Oh, that's fun.
Yes, croissants, anything citrus, lemon bars, even like Cocoa Puffs, any of that kind of stuff. But now I'm like starting to eat pretty healthy.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, like the heartburn is real.
It's real.
It is real.
I mean, I've heard a couple times beginning. During our conversation, Mickey's had to like stop and brace for the pain
right now.
The little man's a soccer player.
Oh God.
So you're eating healthy now and just getting the house ready.
Oh my God. The nursery we painted a couple of days ago, but
oh
yes. And we put together his changing table and crib, but we have a long way to go.
How do you feel motherhood is going to factor into your career and the pace at which you want to run?
It's already a factor. And that's part of the other reason why I've had a really hard time celebrating, but nothing else really compares to that. Like, you can have all of the success in the world, but a child is just not literally, it's the most humbling thing. I was ready, you know, when I was releasing Black Like Me, yes, I'm going to get out there and I've been working out. My body is right. I'm going to get out there and do these red carpets and performances and be great. And then a baby came.
Right.
It was like everything. Like, I'm literally at the will of this child. Like, right. I'm a host.
You're a host.
Mm-hmm. And this isn't my body.
Your first time performing at the ACMs.
Pregnant.
But you look so beautiful. You look absolutely stunning. You're just I looked a little different than I thought I was going to look.
I very much so. I was expecting to be snatched and ready to go. and you know, part of that is a blessing because, you know, the song, it's not about being snatched and ready to go. This, you know, like, I'm a woman.
Nothing can be wrong with you and Grant having a son who's going to be brought up right.
Yeah.
And loved. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a child loved by their parents being brought into the world. There's always room for that.
And showing that a woman can have a career and still be a mother. Like, that doesn't mean your life is over.
Absolutely not. And you've performed in these high pressure moments looking like
pregnant
the beautiful pregnant woman, exactly, that you are. But I'm just so excited for you. I love you, Mickey. And I miss you.
I miss you.
I can't wait to meet that baby.
Oh my God. I can't either. It's wild.
He's going to be a very lucky boy. And I think in 20 years, he'll be the most respectful boyfriend to someone out there.
He's gonna Mama don't play.
He's going to know how to treat him right.
Yes. So. Yes, he will.
Well, I cannot wait for all this exciting stuff to continue unfolding. And, you know, I respect you so much and love you. And
I love you.
Keep putting the beauty out into the world the way you're doing and take us home. Lead the way.
I'll lead us, girl.
All right. Mickey Guyton, we salute you. Thank you so much for being on Salute the Songbird.
Love you, girl.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.
And that's a wrap. You can follow Mickey at Mickey Guyton on her socials and be sure to tune into the 63rd Annual Grammy Awards, where Mickey has been nominated for Best Country Solo Performance for her song Black Like Me from her most recent release, the EP Bridges. And to keep up with me, my music, and my touring calendar, you can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at I Am Maggie Rose. And you can find me on Patreon at patreon.com/IAmMaggieRose, where you can get exclusive Salute the Songbird content, along with new music, live stream concerts, and more. You've been listening to Salute the Songbird on Osiris Media. The executive producers are Kirsten Cluthie and Brad Stratton from Osiris Media and Austin Marshall. And the show is edited and mixed by Brad Stratton. Original music by Maggie Rose. Please subscribe to Salute the Songbird on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast content. And if you like the show, please recommend it to a friend or leave us a review so that others can join the conversation. Thanks for listening, and to close the show, here's the title track of Mickey Guyton's new EP, Bridges.
You're on your side, and I'm on mine, and in between this great divide, there's fire in the street.
This is Chris Pandolfi from the infamous String Dusters, here to let you know that my podcast, Inside the Musician's Brain, is coming back for Season 3, with the first episode dropping on Tuesday, February 1st. Got a lot of great things in store for this season, including some amazing guests. I sat down to chat with Aoife O'Donovan from I'm With Her and the Goat Rodeo Sessions, Nate Hiltz from The Dead South, banjo legend, the master, Mr. Bela Fleck, and plenty of other great guests who help us explore what's behind the music and the artists that inspire us. Stay tuned for Season 3 as we go back inside the musician's brain.
You know, when you are in love or you're heartbroken, you kind of have this feeling, and I talk about it in the song, but when you're out of it, you wonder, like, am I ever going to have that feeling again? Am I ever going to get back to that place?
I'm Davi.
And I'm Cassie.
And we host Broadly Speaking.
We talk any and everything. What's going on in the world?
Sometimes it's caring and sometimes it's caroning. And we just need to be able to decipher the difference. Friends, relationships. Cassie's got the best dad jokes.
Where does a mansplainer get his information?
Where?
From a well, actually. And all the ups and downs of the funny curveball we call life, all with a hefty dose of Davi snark.
I love a good bidet, but surprise bidet is not okay. We'll call it like we see it. So tell Ethel at the front desk to pipe down, you hussy. Plug those earbuds in and we'll help you survive the rest of your 9 to 5.
Listen to Broadly Speaking on Acast or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.